So we're going to switch gears a little bit and start talking about a Feed the Future initiative countries in Africa. Those are the places where we're concentrated mainly on areas where many smallholder farmers grow maize, continuously grow maize and beans once or twice per year. They are grown in an intercrop system, so maize are intercropped with beans on a regular basis. The soils that farmers are actually cultivating are extremely heavily weathered. They have their very nutrient poor. They have a large need of doing a deep inversion type plowing in order to invert that hard pan that develops after prolonged periods of rain. So they're experiencing a lot of low yields issues, especially very variable yields during the short growing season when some of them have to crop for the second time in a year. And again, there's places and regions in the area, mainly in Kenya and Uganda, where the crops are grown twice. So there's a long period of rains where crops are grown once and they're able to harvest it. There's a short period where afterwards they're able to plant a second crop and have a very short turnaround of crops of mainly maize and beans, which is very variable. So in addition to the fact that the crops are sort of mined by maize twice a year, that the amount of cultivation and the amount of deep tillage that the soils experience really necessitates some sort of a need of coming with conservation strategies to help reduce this large magnitude of a disturbance. So possible solutions, you know, there's a whole series or the whole module of what's called conservation agriculture practices that are often designed and they are location specific to solve a variety of local problems. And they are important because they can address social, you know, they have a three-pronged sort of approach of addressing social, environmental, and economic constraints. And a major initiative related to it is the fact that they really need to be driven by needs of farmers, by the observations of their own soils, yields, and environment. And obviously they do incorporate a large component of diversification of cropping, a fair amount of using of cover crops, some degree of soil residue retention of this, although this is with a little bit of a mixed result. And mainly what we are concentrating is the effort of reducing tillage disturbance, the soil disturbance. Farmers have sort of either limited adoption success or they are not really that eager to really accept this new conservation practices based on a lot of principles that they've observed during the growing seasons. Main questions that are often asked during our sort of focus group initiatives and meetings, will the yields be affected and how are they going to go down? You know, they're already generally very low to start with. Are they going to be affected during this process of transition? How long will it take to actually see the benefits? Getting ahead of the weed competition is the number one problem that farmers usually struggle with. A lot of it necessitates continuous repetitive tillage. Some or majority of them cannot afford fertilizer, cannot afford herbicides and so on. Are there any benefits or visual benefits or any true benefits to soil health that can become apparent within this few short years of a transition? And then again, unknown costs of alternative management operations. So we sort of put it together in a packet of a couple of important questions that we're trying to answer to help farmers make these decisions. So our major objective of the study was to identify and assess soil and plant parameters during the period of transition. By using or identifying a specific very selected caps that farmers proposed as viable. The area of our interest and research was in up around Mount Elgin. These are mid elevation areas, growing areas with Trans-Nzoia being a little higher than Bungoma, just because Bungoma is about 1,400 meters, it's much warmer, it's about 27 degrees Celsius. Mean annual precipitation is about 1,200 In comparison to Transalia, where elevation is a little higher, 1900, a little colder, 20 degrees Celsius, and the higher precipitation. The soils are extremely impoverished. They are very low in soil tolerant carbon and nitrogen. They're colonite derivative clay loams, mainly ferrosols of acidic nature, about 5.2. So we actually structured our a series of treatments on the research stations, two research stations, where we blocked a whole plethora of different crust tillage of tillage by cropping sort of strategies, all replicated and randomized throughout. And this was a matter approach, and there was tons of baby approaches where farmers would actually incorporate and introduce some of this concept on their own farms. What I'll be reporting is pretty much data set from the research stations. So there were three main tillage initiatives that farmers were interested in testing right at the same spot. One was CT, which is an inversion type tillage, conventional tillage. Usually farmers till a couple of times using a deep plow, inversion type plowing up down to 25 centimeters, and a series of deep hoeing operations just to try to stay ahead of the weeds for a period of time of a growing season. We also, farmers identify need of learning or introducing what's called an empty or minimum till, which pretty much concentrates on a shallower way of working out the land. And that was introduced through either developing some sort of a tiller or cultivator that can be pulled by donkeys. But in case of our research plots, it was pretty much a shallower digging or shallowing weeding and what we call scratching. For weed control, and no-till is a pretty much a technique that reduces or removes tillage absolutely from the entire system in exchange of using a series of chemicals to control weeds, which was farmers recognized that this is a sort of a necessity in order to starting transitioning to reduced tillage practices. For cropping, I'm going to report on two specific treatments, the typical farming, which is a continuous maize bean intercropping, and relay, where after beans are removed or harvested from the interrow, we are relaying the plots or interrows with mucuna, which is a velvet bean. It's a cover crop that has a lot of success in the different regions. We were hoping, and farmers are hoping, that that's going to bring in and help retain a little bit of a nitrogen in the soil and smother the weeds. So the materials and methods, we had a series of campaigns that were attributed or associated with these different seasons, growing seasons, long rains, short rains, and a fallow. Mainly we did a lot of sampling in May, October, in March. We visited the areas three times a year in a heavily replicated sort of a setup. We had four fields, and within those we identified a series of plots. We also tried to identify the soils associated with individual crops, which is maize and beans or mucuna as a solo afterwards. We did a lot of soil sampling of 0 to 10 centimeters. We pre-incubated them and analyzed for ammonia and nitrate, and we actually brought them here and identified what's called potential mineralizable nitrogen under anaerobic conditions. I have this data. I'm not sure if I'll get to presenting them today. We also did the snapshots of trace gas emissions. So we measured, we used the standard sort of method of sampling, and we monitored and analyzed the samples for nitrous oxide and methane and CO2, and with this two being reported today. And then we did, at 8 weeks after the planting during long rains, we went out and did a pretty thorough weed analysis, or weed population counting analysis. Just to give you an idea about chemical inputs that were suggested and recommended for us, we used about nitrogen at 140 pounds, and then phosphorus. And then there are three major chemicals that were used as recommended by our extension advisors and by some of the collaborators. So just to give you an idea how high the wheat yields are, or maize and beans yields are, Bungoma, the lower elevation area with two growing seasons, was much lower compared to Transalia, despite the fact that they were growing crops twice a year. The soils are extremely impoverished, very disturbed, and you know, the chances of a failing crop during the short seasons often occurs as well. So what are the indices? How we are trying to measure any change? So we looked on annual basis of time zero or a year number one when we employed the techniques of reducing tillage and continued it for a period of 2 years. We noticed that in Bungoma we had immediate sort of responses of reducing CO2 or reduced CO2 anywhere by 10 to 20 milligrams per car of CO2 carbon per meter squared per hour. And the two reduced tillage strategies were really bringing a lot of initial early benefits that we thought were really important indices of the mobility of the soil to actually be able to retain some amount of the carbon that is being introduced through a variety of cropping strategies. The earliest response was already in Bungoma. We think that's associated with the fact that the reduced tillage strategies during the short season really had a better impact on the soil. Now just to, and I understand it's a really busy sort of a graph, but just to give you an idea, areas in green, they just show us that generally no tillage is very successful in reducing that CO2, in lowering it anywhere, again, between 10 to 20 milligrams. And then relaying actually, so generally the CO2 is actually reduced, and next thing is that if we put relay, or use mucuna as a part of a relay with reduced tillage, we're actually even able to retain more nitrogen, which is a critical commodity in the soils and the systems as well. Another observations we did, we were looking at the weed dynamics and how things sort of were panning out for a period of 2 years or 3 years. And with the blue line being a typical conventional deep tillage inversion staying pretty flat throughout the year, obviously, we noticed a drastic decline in weed populations that was associated with, you know, introducing the system or introducing the reduced tillage practices that are obviously a combination of chemical weed control and a tillage on its own. We felt like this immediate declines were pretty meaningful, and they obviously responded to, you know, both broadleaf cover crops or broadleaf weeds and narrow leaves responded positively to these practices within 2 years, which really caught and gained a farmer's perception of some sort of an early success of these technologies. They always try to stay ahead of the weeds. Just to give you an idea what specific weed species respond to tillage and to relay cropping, we've noticed that at least three or four of the most common weeds were able to be suppressed or reduced using these practices, using both conservation tillage practices and then using a legume mucuna as a smothering crop. They had quite a mixed lack with getting ahead of a goat weed. It was just everywhere, and none of the new practices that we were able to employ were getting ahead of the goat weed on its own. So there's a lot of call and conversation dialogue about how to really manage this most abundant weed in the systems. And another question that farmers were asking is, you know, we can't afford herbicides, it's pretty expensive. So my students went ahead and just did a lot of sort of monitoring and inputs of the data for a 2012 when she actually added all the costs associated with inputs, non-preparations, and the weed control. It appears that the labor is one of the highest and cost prohibitive costs associated with weed with weed control. Obviously, the presence of it's right over here, and the materials associated with fertilizers and chemicals also were pretty high. What happens is that costs in conventional were driven by highest demand for the labor, while during the land preparations, during the weeding, the largest differences occurred between no-till and conventional, and that was mainly because of the replacement of labor by some chemicals with a combination of chemicals and the labor in minimum till. So as conclusions, we felt like we already saw some early indications of soil organic matter retention because we were able to notice some reduction of carbon nitrogen losses to trace gas emissions, so the snapshots of trace gas emissions that we were doing during the first 3 years. We've noticed a large component, a large presence of improved weed control and reduced costs associated with these practices. Also, the relay cropping using mucuna, putting mucuna after harvesting beans, in both reduced and no-till, was really successful in not only smothering the weeds, but also were able to retain more nitrogen, which is a really critical sort of a commodity that we're relying on. Now we'd like to spend more time and come up with indices that would help improve, or strategies that would help improve farming strategies in Bungoma in the lower elevation area, trying to promote perhaps more reduced tillage practices during especially the short rain seasons. This is when majority of plant inputs that are accrued after the first growing season are being lost to a lot of mineralizations. And our data show that we have a very high nitrous oxide emissions. We have very high potential mineralizable nitrogen in Bungoma during this short season period of time when not only crops are grown during the short rains, but also they tilt constantly. That disturbance on its own really prevents farmers from accruing or restoring soil on a regular basis. And this is all I have for today, and I would entertain any questions that you might have. Thank you.
One or two questions.
Yeah, sorry, but I might mean a slide showing comparison of the yield among the
between. You would like to see the yield? Okay, yeah. Right in here. So maize and beans, they are really low in general. We have 1.3 megatons per hectare in Bungoma, which is a low elevation to growing season, versus 2 tons per hectare in Transoya, which is a one growing season.
So yield doesn't change due to different
tillage tactics? I don't have this data. This is just sort of a background data that we obtained at the year one. I don't have the data to report on changes in yield. This is a different collaborator that's working with. I was looking at mainly some sort of a change associated with the wheat population, but
okay.
It's coming next year.
Yield is, I think, most important factor to calculate cost benefit to you.
Absolutely. I cannot agree more. Yes. It's coming, I promise. Yes.
What was the land prep cost for the no-till higher than the medium till?
Land prep cost higher for the medium till, let me see.
So it's 80.
Labor. It's right here.
Labor, right?
Yes, it was mainly labor. So backpack applications, vary the hourlies of the labor associated with it. Yes.
You just presented there's one rate of nitrogen. Across all these treatments, did you vary the rates at all?
For this particular research, it's only one rate, but this is a part of a way larger experiment,
okay.
And we will have comparison across different rates of nitrogen as well. This one was
do you know
recommended.
How that compared to the typical, are fertilizers used in the region generally?
This would be on a little bit of a higher, you know, application of fertilizer is when farmers can afford a fertilizer. So this is something that would be employed in order just to sort of create the optimum conditions for the growth. So it's a little bit on the higher side, I would say.
That's
so.
I wonder if you could let us know about the liquidities. Are they maybe available to the farmers? Are they costly? Is it something maybe if they did buy once, it's reduced themselves?
You can collect, they do a lot of seed saving. The only problem with it is that they are not dipped or inoculated with inoculum. There's different elevations have mixed results. Different farmers have mixed results with it. Establishment is one issue, but also producing a viable part of the growth to cover and smother the weeds and being an interos is a difference. So we're still working on trying to fix it up, figure it out. The pH is really low, so it prevents successful establishments of the bacteria as well. So.
Yeah. We need to postpone further discussion until the discussion time, which is only after a few more presentations.
Okay.
So thank you for the very interesting presentation.